I'm here in Palmerstown Road talking to Mary Pyle. Talk to me about your days growing up in Limerick. That's your maiden name is
Burrows. My father was headmaster of Villiers School, which in those days was in Henry Street, fairly centrally in Limerick. And I lived there until I was nine. And so I grew up really during the war years. So I was very confused when I grew up because I could remember a stagecoach taking on passengers. And I couldn't understand how this came about, but apparently there was somebody who ran a stagecoach when there weren't any buses. And I can still remember it going up Main Street there.
Yes, indeed. And your father, well, your background, he was a teacher in the school.
He was a teacher. He was the headmaster. And so we lived actually in the school. It was quite a small boarding school, but there were boarders there as well.
And soon after he left?
Then we went to Cork when I was nine, and he was headmaster of the Grammar and High School in Cork. So I grew up there until I went to Alexandra in Dublin for my last 2 years and then on to Trinity.
And what degree did you take when you
went? I did French and English initially, and then I taught. And then I married and we lived out of Dublin for a long time. I came back and trained as a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, which I've been doing ever since.
Talk to me about your college days in Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
What was the college like in those days?
It was a lot smaller. It was friendlier in a way because you knew nearly everybody there. It was complicated for women. I lived in Trinity Hall, which was where it still is in Dartry Road. But if we went to the library in the evening, we had to sign out of Trinity Hall. We had to sign in at Front Gate in Trinity. We had to sign into the library. Then we had to sign out of the library, out of the Front Gate and back into Trinity Hall. So if you forgot your signature, it might be a bit complicated.
And this was in the 1950s, was it?
Yes, late 50s.
And who were the professors? Do you remember your own professors?
Yes, the professor of English was Professor White. The man who was going to become my father-in-law, Dr. Pyle, was also a teacher and lecturer in English. He did a lot of sort of medieval English. And my favourite bit was sort of old and middle English when I was there. And then French, I remember Hugh Shields. He was a young lecturer then, although he's retired now. And Professor Arnoux was Professor of French.
Mm-hmm. And coming from a Church of Ireland background, so it was accepted in those days but it was closed. Was it still closed to Catholics at the time?
As far as I know, Trinity was never closed to Catholics, but the Catholic Archbishop had put the ban
McQuaid,
on it.
It was really McQuaid, yeah.
Yes. But there were some. I mean, one good friend of ours was Larry Roach, and who did forestry and became a very well-known forester in Wales. I think he was professor of forestry there. He was a Catholic, and there were a few others in my time were there.
Mm. Was it? Did you find, being a student there, did you think about it, or did you ever question, why it was at the time closed doors to Roman Catholics?
I suppose, coming from the Church of Ireland background, it just seemed strange that people should be forbidden to go somewhere, because we didn't have bans like that in the Church of Ireland. If you wanted to go wherever, there was nothing to say you shouldn't. It all seemed to come from the Catholic side. So I suppose, insofar as I did think about it, it was, I wonder why they have rules like that. But otherwise, not particularly. I had a good friend who was, a couple of them who were in Trinity Hall, who were girls who came from England, and they were Catholics because the ban didn't apply to them.
What about the, was there a lot of entertainment with the students? Were there student groups there at the time and that?
Oh yes, there were. I mean, all the language departments had their own language societies, and then there was the Elizabethan Society, and of course there were a lot of sports societies, and there was players which had been going for a long time because my mother was very active in players when she was in Trinity, and I went there for a while, but then the choral society won out as far as I was concerned, and there wasn't time for both. The days clashed.
And how many years did you spend 4 years
4 years, yes.
there? And what happened afterwards?
I did Dip Ed then afterwards, which in those days was really, looking back, was true exploitation because I had a full-time job, was teaching full-time hours for virtually no pay, and then had to do the studying in the evenings and get to lectures in the evenings. So it really was a sort of baptism of fire that year. And I can remember coming home with sort of 30 exercise books just for one class that had to be corrected, as well as getting my own study done, that kind of thing.
Where did you teach?
I taught in Diocesan School for Girls, which was near, what was it? It was in Diocesan School for Girls, which was in town then before it joined up with high school and they both moved out.
Out to.
Dainham House in Terenure, Rathgar.
So at that stage then, is that when you met your future husband? Was it in and around?
It was about that time, I think. He was, we didn't know each other in college, but he came back. And I had met him. I knew his sister because she'd been in school and college with me. And he looked around the library to see if there was somebody to go to coffee with. And I was the only face he recognized. So we went and had coffee together. I remember thinking, what are we going to talk about? I've only met him about once.
What's his first name?
Fergus.
And at the time, was he still a student or was he?
No, he wasn't. We weren't in co we didn't correspond at all in college. He'd graduated before I got there. He was working in Aer Lingus at that time in London, and very active in Tourum and running the Tourum magazine over there, which ultimately led to his joining the Irish Times.
And it all started with the Tourum,
For him, it
the
did, yes. I
magazine.
wasn't involved in it because I was in Dublin and it was a very much a London publication.
What were they trying to do at the time? Were they the airport or the Aer Lingus was new, really, and they were trying to grow. So did the magazine
No, it
promote
was
that?
nothing to do with Aer Lingus. Tourum was a group of expats, really, I think, in London who were missing Ireland. So it wasn't connected to Aer Lingus itself, but he just happened to be working for Aer Lingus, but which I think was fairly boring. But this was what he was interested in, doing the
In the
journalism
publishing,
bit in publishing,
yes,
or in the journalism part of it.
yes, and the kind of articles that he was writing at the time, what were they in relation to?
Well, I think his big scoop was getting an interview with Conor Cruise O'Brien, which, when he applied to the Irish Times for a job, he was able to point to this particular edition that he'd edited, an interview that he'd done, and said, "Look, this is what I can do." So he was taken on provisionally by the Irish Times, and then he stayed there.
You went over and you taught yourself for 1 year in
One
London,
term,
was it? One term.
in a secondary modern school in London.
And then as soon as your husband got his appointment with the Irish Times, you
I
followed
came
him
back
back.
at Christmas then, yes.
Where did you live at that time?
We lived in Talla, and which was sort of new and green fields everywhere. There was just a little village and a few houses on the main road, and the first sort of estate. We were one of the first six houses there. So it was nothing like it is now. It was countryside.
Why did you pick Tala to go to?
Because it was what we could afford at the time. We had very little money, and you could afford a new house, but we couldn't really have afforded an older house. And anything else was too dear, really. So that seemed to be manageable at that time. I suppose a bit like people commuting to the dormitory suburbs around Dublin now, the young people are doing.
And that was sometime in the 60s then, wasn't it?
That was in 1963. Yeah.
What was Tallaght like in 1963? You said it was a lot of green fields, the six houses, but the little village that was there.
There was a little village, and it had a little village and a church, but we didn't go there very much because we tended to go off to one of the bigger shops down in Temple Oak to do our shopping because there wasn't very much up there. There was a pub, quite a nice pub, as I remember. But there were buses were few and far between. I think there were maybe three in a day or something like that. So we had to kind of negotiate use of the car very carefully. And I was still teaching at that time in Glengarra over Dunleary. So it was a trek to get across there.
And you had to do that every day.
I did it, I think I cut it down to 3 times a week then, because really every day was nearly impossible to get across. So I did part time. At least I know I did part time after my first child was born for a little while, and then I gave up altogether. I may have done full time when we were first married.
And the work your husband was doing inside the Irish Times, of course, that provided a lot of traveling for him, and that meant he had. So you were really. Did you find that you were totally cut off
Yes, I
then?
did. And that was one of the things I really didn't like. I gave up teaching after when my first child was born, partly because I realized that I had no tax allowance and absolutely everything I earned was going on the petrol to get across to the job. So it really didn't seem to be worthwhile keeping it on for at that stage. It was very cut off. And I felt terribly isolated there a lot of the time. And particularly because I think everybody who went into those houses had got married at the same time. We all had our children at the same time. And when I was feeling really depressed and cut off, I used to think we're all going to die at the same time. It's just, pattern like that.
Yes, because it was at the time just a village, and
Yeah.
then it was the only way that South C County Dublin could grow out
Yeah.
that direction.
Yeah.
So, did you know that? Could you see development gradually taking place?
No, not really. I mean, we didn't see it coming. Unfortunately, we moved before it did happen because we were only there for about 3 years. And then Fergus was moved to Belfast, so we went to live there, which was a huge relief, actually, because there were people of different generations in the road. There were people of different generations where we lived. There were older people, there were younger people, and it just felt much more normal than the sort of pattern that had been in Tallaght.
But for those 3 years in Tallaght that you lived there, you went to you used the church there, the facilities, the or did you
Very
virtually?
little. I think we were still sort of very much attached to what we had in Dublin before. So we tended to go back in and go to St. Bartholomew's Church and do our shopping, maybe in Temple Oak or maybe in sort of one of the newer, H. Williams was the sort of big supermarket then. So we used to go and do our shopping and things there. So in fact, I think we used the village very little.
The big houses, the big estates were there at the time. What are your memories of those houses? They were fine buildings, large, manicured gardens.
Didn't see much of them.
Did you not?
No.
What about the two factories?
The two factories, that was Ernie's and another
Ernie's,
one. My
yeah.
neighbor's parents, my neighbor's father worked in Ernie's, I think. So that was just the connection we had there. And we used to go for walks around there sometimes on Green Hills Road, which is, I think, where they were, if I remember. But Looking back, I think I saw very little of Tala itself, because we used to keep, most of our friends were in town, so we tended to keep on going back. Was friends with the neighbors on either side because we all had children of about the same age, so they all played together, and it was quite good because it meant one mother could be in charge for the morning and the others could do whatever they wanted to do, and that worked quite well.
After 3 years, you yourself and Fergus went off to Belfast. How many years did you spend in Belfast?
We were in Belfast for 4 years, and then Paris for two and Brussels for two.
The 4 years in Belfast, now that's interesting because really it was the beginning of the troubles. Did you find the tension up there? Were you in Belfast itself?
Yes, we were. And yes, it was tense. And I mean, there were things like Fergus saw a car driving up the road and he thought, I just don't like the look of that car. It's up to no good. Thought he had memorized the number. Didn't. Then thought, oh, well, what the hell? And 5 minutes later, a bomb went off and he knew that, that's the car that had done it. But so you did have things like that going on. And we were warned. There was a time when journalist children were apparently being kidnapped, so we were warned that we needed to be very careful with the children. They were small, so they weren't going to be out without us anyway.
Had Fergus to be careful about what he wrote in the paper?
No, I don't think so. I think he was the first journalist up there really who wrote about everything and wrote from both sides and talked to both sides.
The government at the time, the Irish government, Minister for Post and Telegraphs, Collins, brought in the Section 31 ban. Now, was your husband asked at any stage or curtailed about his work? To be.
Not that I remember, but I don't remember him talking to any of the IRA per se, but what he was more interested in, and I think was sort of doing more for, was or talking to more, was what was the Catholic viewpoint up there, with the unionist unions being so much in charge, and what did the Catholics feel about that? So he was very much involved in talking to people like Bernadette Devlin and so on, who were very much in the news at that time, and he was there at the beginning of the Alliance Party, and knew the people who were setting up that one to try and get away from the unionists, and knew John Hume and so on. So
Would he have
it
interviewed John Hume?
oh yes, John Hume stayed with us at one stage. I remember John Hume being in and out of our apartment, and
Did he come across as being as passionate as he?
oh, very much, yes. Very much, very passionate, very enthusiastic.
And what was the so that in a way you were very much involved in what was going on there at the time, but would that have been a reason why you left after 4 years?
No, he was, it was the beginning of the European Community, and he was asked if he would go to Paris to explain Europe to the Irish. So I think Paris was decided on because Brussels would come later, but we hadn't yet joined. So it was a question of posting him somewhere in Europe where he could give the differences and travel around and go to wherever was necessary.
That must have been an exciting time for
It
you as
was.
well.
It was. Although he laughed afterwards and said I must have been the only person who was drag kicking and screaming from Belfast to Paris. But it was a very comfortable life in Belfast with young children and so on, and having to sort out schools and apartments and babysitting possibilities and so on with small ones. It was quite daunting.
And this was to Brussels and Paris, was it?
Paris first and then Brussels.
And did you find it easy settling down? It was, what, about a
Well,
year or
it
2 years?
was, we were 2 years in each place. It was probably easier for Fergus in many ways because he had the continuity of the job, whereas I had to sort of sort out things like schools and so on. Once the children were established, then we could really begin to relax and enjoy it. But it wasn't very easy to take them away from their friends and establish them somewhere else in a language they weren't speaking. So that was difficult.
What was it like for Fergus and maybe you, because I'm sure you were working in the background as well, in portraying Ireland and trying to explain it to the Europeans?
I don't know that he did as much of that because he was writing for the Irish Times. So he was really portraying the Europeans to the Irish.
Oh, the other way
The
around.
other way around, yes. So he would do all sorts of things. I mean, he could go to an art gallery, he could walk around the city, he would interview a politician. It was very, very varied. But to try and give some flavour of what it was like to be in a foreign city to Ireland, which was quite insular at that time. I mean, it's a completely different place now.
Yes, indeed. It was the beginning of the European market. It was all opening up as well.
It was. Do you want to
Your time in Paris, was that trying to understand the culture and the nature of the French people, was that easy?
Not always, and you came up against things that were completely unexpected. One of the worst experiences was the massacre at the Olympic Games, if you remember that. Fergus had gone up to the opening of the Olympic Games, and he had come back on a train that morning, arrived into Paris at lunchtime, and heard on the news about the massacre, got the next train back to the Olympic Games, didn't have time to go to the bank. I had a check for whatever, which was actually a check for me for something I had written for the Irish Times. So I took it off to our local bank where Fergus had an account and said, could I cash it? Because I had no money for food for the weekend. And the man in the bank said, no, sorry, you don't have an account here. I can't cash it. So I said, well, you know me well. You know my husband has an account here. Yes, but that's his account. It's not your account. So I can't cash your check. Well, it's a check made out to me, not to him. And he has an account here. Can you still not make that? No, we cannot make cash that check for you. So I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Because I have no money. He's had to go back. How am I supposed to live for the weekend? By this time, I was getting angry. So he took 100 francs out of his pocket, slammed it down on the counter rudely, and said, well, if that will get you out of an emergency, you can pay me back next week.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
You were met with that type
We could be, yes.
of problem,
Yeah.
really. And yes, indeed. I mean that would upset anyone, wouldn't it? But what about your children in school? Did they manage to get on well with the other children?
They did in a while. It was difficult for them at first, not speaking the language at all. But we decided to send them to local schools rather than to the European school or an international one, partly because we lived near local schools that were good, and it would have meant a lot of traveling for them. And also, we thought that at their age, because they were very young, we could try and sort of put them in the deep end. And that, yes, they survived, but it wasn't easy for them at first, I think.
Was there anything good that happened in Paris?
Yes, there were several very good things, and one that was absolutely typical and the opposite of my bank story was when I had a new au pair. I usually sent them to buy vegetables and told them to get whatever was the cheap article du jour. And an au pair went over and came back, and she said, there were lovely blood oranges there and they were quite cheap, but the woman in the shop refused to sell them to me. She just kept saying, non, pas pour madame. I don't know why she wouldn't sell them to me. They looked lovely. But I knew that she had remembered that my daughter had told my son blood oranges had real blood in them and he wouldn't eat them, so I could never buy them. And she remembered that, but she couldn't explain it to the au pair.
And you know, I suppose the what was the title? What title did Fergus have at the time?
He was, I think, Paris correspondent, as far as I remember.
And so it was time for you to move up to Brussels then.
Yes, when we finally joined, then we went to Brussels and he became the Brussels correspondent and
In
in
Brussels.
Brussels.
And you had to uproot everything and off and try and do
Which
the same again,
yes,
I
which
think.
again was complicated. This is part of the Brussels thing, but moving from Paris to Brussels was very difficult because I was doing it from the Paris end, he was doing it from the Brussels end, but I was supposed to have his passport to do various things at the Paris end, and he couldn't live in Brussels without his passport. So it was really a huge amount of negotiating there, which when you look back from now just seems quite incredible.
Yes, there were different times, right? When you arrived in Brussels, it was the setting up, really. At the it, this was 1972, was it? About
Yes, it was.
you had the setting up of the Brussels itself, the European market. There were a lot of people migrating from all over Europe and England and Ireland. So there was a great mixture of culture, of people there. Did you find that?
Yes, I did. And it was very different from Paris because in Paris we had our friends and we'd been lucky enough to have friends before we went there, and that spread out so that we did have a good circle of friends. It was very difficult to make friends in Brussels because there were so many people coming and going, and NATO and so on had been there. And the local people really didn't want to know any of these foreigners moving in, not because they were unfriendly, but because people came for a year or 2 years and then they went. So, you didn't really take time to get to know them. You hadn't time to get to know them. And I think this is one reason why there were a lot of different sort of national ghettos there, because it was so hard to get to know the local people. And also, a lot of people were moving in who didn't speak French or Flemish, and so tended to stick in their own nationality, because at first there was a reputation that everybody was in there, stuck in their ghetto and didn't move out.
And was that the case where you lived? Was it were you very much in an Irish area or?
No, we weren't, and in fact we were lucky enough not to do that. And again, we sent children to local schools. So I tended to meet parents where the children were at school and sort of make friends that way.
Was that those 2 years they were? Did they move quickly or did they
Oh, they
drag?
did. No, they moved very quickly.
And back to Ireland again.
And back to Ireland again.
So it was in the middle of the 70s, 75 or so, you were back. And
Yes, the end of 74.
where did you settle when you came back?
Here,
Where we are
where
in.
we are now. Well, we did as soon as we could move in, but we had a few months in what was known as the Flat Els down in Sandymount, where it was a cross between a hotel and an apartment. It was a kind of self-contained apartment, but you could rent it by the week. And they were very good, very, very good to us there, because my fourth child was about to be born and I was quite ill, and they minded us there. And then we moved in here just after he was born.
Palmerston Road, which is, I mean, these houses are just beautiful houses. And, when you came in here, tell me about it. How did it all come about? And you just saw the house and
So a lot
bought
of
it.
houses, and we saw this one, which was in three apartments then, and it was relatively cheap because it was an executive sale. I think it was 16,000. So we could just about manage it. But I think what we liked about it was that as soon as we stepped in, it was bright, and all the children instantly felt at home and said, "Okay, this is home." And it was, and has been ever since.
Your neighbors, the people that live here, would they be really Dublin people or are they people coming from other areas?
I would think a mixture. We don't see very much of each other.
Living in Palmerston Road and your neighbors, what kind of people?
Well, when we came back, it was almost entirely flatland. There were hardly any family houses here at all. Next door actually was. There was Commander Cullen lived there in those days. And then Garrett Fitzgerald moved in with his family, and his son still lives there. But bit by bit, the houses have gone back into being family houses. And I think there are very few that are still left as apartments.
But in 1975, were they, was it the place to live in Dublin, or was it?
No, I wouldn't think it was at all. But at the same time, it was near things. It was near schools. It was near shops. And when we came back, because Fergus was editor at that time, we sort of drew a circle on the map around the Irish Times and said, look, it's got to be within that circumference because if there's an emergency in the middle of the night and Fergus had to go in there, or at any time, we felt it wouldn't be good to live too far out.
Rearing a family, your family were growing up at this stage, and you had four children,
Four.
and they all went to the local school here.
They did. Three of them went to Rathgar Junior School, which is just in Rathgar, and then three went to high school, and one went to Wesley.
With the experience they had going around Europe and Belfast and that, do you think that stood to them?
I think so. I think it had its positives and negatives, and mostly positives. I think it was quite difficult, particularly for the older ones, because they kept making friends and then being whisked off to another country and another school. And I think that's quite difficult. Okay, they made friends again, but it didn't give them the sort of security of growing up from the age of four right the way up with the same children. On the other hand, I think having a language like that is very important for them. And it does mean that they've always thought of themselves as being European because that's been so much part of their lives.
It was indeed, yeah.
And just sort of going almost full circle, you asked me at the beginning what it was like growing up in the Church of Ireland. They were quite happy to go to Mass in a Catholic church or Church of Ireland when they came back because this is the experience they'd had on the continent, and they found it very hard to understand that that wasn't always what their peers did here.
Yeah. What would you say about the ups and downs in your life? I'm sure you've taken lots of ups and downs. The highs and lows of your life.
One of the things which I suppose you could call a high has been taking up the cello in the last 10 years, because I spend a lot of time with that, and it's been a whole new dimension that has opened up.
It has given you a new lease of life, you think, in
Well, I
that.
wouldn't say that, but I always liked music, and the piano is very solitary. Whereas with the cello, playing in an orchestra, playing in a group, going to chamber music weekends, and so on, is yes, it's another dimension, which I really like.
And any more? I suppose you. Finding something so wonderful like that in the music, was music always in your family, or was it just something that you took up?
I think it was mostly me. I mean, my parents liked it, but they weren't really involved in it. So I think it was mostly me.
Has it rubbed off in any of your family?
Most of them play something, yes, different things. The youngest plays the saxophone. The second eldest took up the double bass a couple of years ago, and he plays now in the Dublin Orchestral Players. And I play in Greystones Orchestra. My daughter in Australia took up the violin with her children. So, yes, I suppose we all do something.
When you were in college, at the time you told me earlier on that you didn't really know Fergus, that you probably would have met, but you didn't
No,
really know
I
him.
met him after college. I met him through his sister. And
How did all of that come about? I mean,
well, that's hard to remember. Well, that's the bit I told you where I think I was the only face he recognized. So we had coffee together. And then after that, we just.
Fergus passed away 10 years ago.
He did, yes, quite suddenly.
That must have been a low in your life.
Yes, that was a great low. And I mean, one of the things I remember was looking out the window and thinking, do I really want to stay on in this house, which we bought together and where we had lived? And at first thinking perhaps not, and then suddenly realizing, no, the house is part of our security. Everybody feels safe in this house, so I'm going to stay here, in spite of the fact of people often saying, are you going to move? I don't think so.
It has too many memories.
It is too many memories, and people come and go. And when the family from Australia comes over, there's room to put them up. And so no, I think we'll stay here.
Do you still write yourself?
No, I haven't for a long time now.
And do you miss the fact that to buy the Irish Times on a on whatever day Ferguson's article would appear, and looking through it, would you have helped him in his writings?
Not often, no. He usually did it himself, and he did it in there. He would be in the office writing, so that's I wouldn't be involved in that. In fact, I was very much outside his Irish Times life.
What about being an editor in there? That was a huge responsibility.
It was, and I don't think it suited him very well. He was much better as a journalist than as an editor. I don't think he's very good at delegating things. And he wasn't editor for very long. His happiest times actually were in the last few years of his life, where he was interviewing people like Cole and so on, because I think that's what he was best at. He was really good at interviewing political people, and he really enjoyed that in a way that he didn't enjoy the editing.
Being in there and having like to delegate the work
Yeah, I
and
think
read
that,
other people's work and
yes, and again, I felt very cut off from him at that time because he spent most of the day and a lot of the night in there, and it was not part of his life that he shared at home, really. I think he just wanted to be right away from it when he was at home.
Fergus's background, the piles, where did they originate from?
England, I think his grandfather was English, but his grandfather sort of disappeared, I think, back to England. So his father never knew him. And there are very few in the phone book, for instance. I think they were all family until quite recently. So it is an unusual name over here. I probably know more about my mother-in-law's family because they came from. They were clergy like mine. So, in
And
fact, both families were full of clergy.
what was her name?
Kinnearney. And I think it's perhaps a West of Ireland name.
Like Kearney or
No,
Kinnearney.
Kinnearney, yeah.
And what part of West of Ireland do you know or?
She grew up, no, I can't
Yeah,
remember.
it's
My own family, yes, I'm not good on his parents, I think.
Talk to me about Fergus's.
D'Estaire.
Yes, I suppose, yeah.
He apparently he was set up by the county council to tackle O'Connell about something. Now, my knowledge of history is bad, so you'll have to check the details. But he was challenged to a duel by Daniel O'Connell, or challenged Daniel O'Connell to a duel. And the problem was that D'Estaire, I think, was a military man and was used to shooting and was a good shot, so he aimed to miss. Daniel O'Connell also, I think, aimed to miss, but was not such a good shot and hit D'Estaire, who took 3 days to die or something like that. It was a very tragic and long drawn out story. And from then on, O'Connell wore a black glove on his hand.
Now, the stair man you're talking about, what relation is he to Fergus?
He was, I don't know how many greats grandfather. But he was one of his ancestors.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Did you decide to take up anything else other than the cello in later
Well,
in your life?
not later, but when I came back from Brussels, I trained as a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, so I've been doing that ever since. And in that capacity, I I'm in private practice, but I also set up the training MSc in psychoanalytic psychotherapy, which is now attached to Trinity. I was one of the people who got that together. And so really that's been my professional life ever since I've been back.
And very much your focus, I'd say.
It is, yes.
And exactly, how difficult is that work? I mean, it must be stressful in a sense.
Yes, it is. I think more recently I've been doing more of more in the institute and the MSc because everybody who is training has to be in therapy. So I have a lot of students who are with me in therapy or in supervision, and it is stressful, but it's also very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the background for that work would have been out of your own life's experience. You would have been able to contribute in ways.
Well, some of it, yes, but I mean, we all are what we are, and with the experiences that we've had. But then the training is very important too, and a large part of the training is our own analysis to get to know ourselves better, so as to be able to use who we are in the work.
Well, I'll tell you, your story is incredible. You know, when you think of all the traveling and looking back now over all of those years, would you change any of it?
No, I don't think I would, actually. I probably wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, Mary Pyle, thank you very much for talking to me. Thank you.